Hello and welcome to episode 26 of the End of Seeking podcast with myself, Martin, and
me, Imogen.
Yeah. Maybe, do you want to start with, have you got any sort of announcements before we jump in?
Nothing new from last week. Just the month of light coming up and my weekly meeting on Wednesday and two meetings on Sunday.
But okay. All that can be found at
beyondimogen.com/events.
Great. All right. So you've been busy lately?
Yeah, it's been a full on week.
You've been sort of retooling your various things, websites and whatnot.
Yeah, just lots of possibilities opening up in all sorts of different directions and just sort of adjusting and responding to those things in life as best I can.
Yeah, I think it feels like 2024 has sort of hit the ground running. That's the sort of the feeling energetically. I did read somewhere it was this year is the year of the solar maximum, which is the sun that goes on a energetic 11-year cycle and sort of from lower to higher energy and down again. I didn't even know that. You think it's a sort of a constant, don't you? It's like it's the sun, but no, it has a pretty predictable and regular cycle of activity. So this year's maximum solar energy. So, you know, that's a thing.
Yeah, it came up today, actually. It came up in two completely different contexts, but the same almost word-for-word experience that people have been having the last week or so, certainly the last few days. And it's this sort of sense of contraction or detoxification or cleanup work of old ways of moving in light of an immediate or it's already happening sense of expansion. And that's certainly what I'm feeling. If I were to put it into words, that's what I'm noticing in myself, is like there's a need and a pull towards an expansion, but there's some things holding you back from that expansion that need to sort of be dealt with, need to be cleaned up, need to be transmuted.
Yeah.
And it's funny how that came up in a group of people I was speaking with, but also with another person who's completely not connected with that. These ideas, they were feeling that and I was feeling that as well. So it's a very interesting thing. And I think it often works that way. When we're called to expand, we have to let go of some things which were actually served us, but no longer serve us in that expansion.
Yeah, it's like a bit of a snake shedding a skin, isn't it? You can't keep going forward carrying all the old. You've got to release the baggage to sort of expand, to go forward, to grow. Yeah, that makes sense. Growth cycle.
Yes.
So what were we gonna talk about today? There was something in particular.
We had two ideas that had come up. One, we had a conversation earlier today that you ended up saying this beautiful sentence that encompassed what the conversation was about, and it was, "Experience is a great teacher."
The greatest teacher.
Yes.
Actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things that was quite lively and fresh in both of our experience.
So there was two angles on this. I meant it the second of these things. The first, because we had written it down, we got a little list of stuff. So we keep track of, hey, maybe we'll talk about this, maybe we'll talk about that. So we got a little list of things we might want to
explore. Yeah, we just see what's lively, what's rooted in experience in that moment.
So I think back in even July, what was the thing?
The first
knowledge
one,
trumps.
Yeah, a small well in a flood, experience trumps knowledge.
Yeah, so that was the first sense of this meaning about experience being the experience trumping knowledge.
Yeah.
With and that particular verse, that experience, that idea, I think we've talked about it, which is the verse in the Gita, which says, you know, to the enlightened Brahman, all of the Vedas are as much use in a small well in a place surrounded by water.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, you know, once you have the direct experience of living the self, then any sort of scripture or commentary or description is, you know, it's of no real value to you because you're rooted in that reality. So in that sense, the experience trumps the knowledge about the experience.
And also the intellectual knowledge about experience, when you have the direct lived experience of something, it's so much more richer and has so much more, I could use the word dimensional tone to it, that intellectual understanding is pales in comparison to that, actually.
Yeah, the map is not the territory, and I mean, or the territory is not the map, and so it's like that, and the map kind of can direct us to the territory, but the lived reality of it is much more and different.
Yeah, it's because in the mind cannot fathom the fullness of the experience, all the layers of experience, because the mind is only one layer, one dimensional, one level of experience. And so it is trying to parse all experience through its own paradigm, its own viewpoint. And that's not sufficient.
No, it's not.
And so where we orientate towards that intellectual understanding, we actually miss the fullness of the lived experience of it. And that's, there's nothing wrong with intellectual understanding in my view. It's just that cannot be primary.
Well, I think part of the problem in this domain, the domain of spirituality and enlightenment and awakening, what I see is a common problem, is that when someone will enter into this, naturally, you know, I find awakening comes upon us whether you know, or the process of, you know, seeking truth.
We don't choose it. It happens, though.
But for a while there, until the experience is clearly recognized, there's the mind can often be the leader in approaching it, approaching reality. But the expectation is that the answer, let's say, to the mind's questions will be found in the mind.
Yeah.
When actually the answers to the mind's questions and the mind's exploration will be found beyond the mind.
Yeah, which is why the mind, you have to be able to let go of the mind, because you have to be able to traverse and go beyond the realm of the mind.
Yeah.
That later on includes that, but it transcends it, more importantly.
Yeah. So it's a sort of a, you'll find, and I think it's interesting. I'm always called to mind when we have these discussions about how these things nothing's new here. And so that's why I often say, oh, Ramana had this experience, or, you know, Jesus had that experience, or Nisargadatta spoke about this. You know, this isn't new. And I remember some stories of, you know, real profoundly, studied Sanskrit scholars and scriptural scholars and stuff would come to Ramana, and Ramana was this, you know, barely dressed sage sitting, you know, on his lounger with a loincloth on, and unschooled in any, you know, religion or scholarly exploits. He was just this sage who actually woke up, you know, in his youth, spontaneously, no teaching, just bang, he had this event that happened to him when he saw that he wasn't the body, and that was really kind of it for him. I mean, he sat in that for years and years as a kind of a hermit. But anyway, by the time he was you know, the ashram and the thing had grown up around him, all these followers that were recognizing his, you know, spiritual power. You know, he would have all sorts of people coming to him, but particularly these sort of scholars in spiritual things, and they would offer up their
best understanding
and knowledge, and immediately he would just make it into dust, or at least just demonstrate the fulfillment of it, and that their understanding was not it. It wasn't the end. Their knowledge wasn't the goal. And we talk about this, don't we? You know, I think it's even on the website. We're not trying to add to anyone's store of knowledge.
No.
It's about, in this path, this process of awakening, it's about discovering what's beyond all that knowledge and where that knowledge arises from, even. Yeah.
And this is only offering as a way of pointing to that in each and every one of us.
Yeah.
To me, anything else is useless if it doesn't point back to your own direct experience. Mm.
The goal isn't intellectual knowledge.
No.
The answers that you're seeking aren't found in they won't be intellectual answers. They're experiential.
Yeah.
And
so constantly pointing beyond just the thoughts of something and into the subtler and subtler realms allows you to see the experience not just on a conceptual level only, let's say, because it doesn't exclude that, but it does allow you to really start to sink into all the layers of experiencing, which for most people remain relatively mysterious, as in they're not at home or comfortable in the language of these different realms.
But ultimately transcend them all and include them all.
Yeah.
So that was one, that was one aspect of the echo of this idea to speak about.
Experience as the greatest teacher.
Yeah. But I think what we were touching on earlier was that just everyday experience is the great guru.
Everything that happens to us.
Yeah, it makes me think, you know, on my website, I have like a bio, you know, just, you know, telling this somewhat a little bit of a potted story about, you know, how I came, you know, through this process and whatnot. But, you know, it's a narrative. And I could pick 1,000 narratives.
Yeah.
To go there. And The reality is when we tell the story, we communicate through narratives and we communicate through stories, and they're really valuable for communicating, really helpful. But of course, you know, for any event, there's many narratives.
Yeah.
Some are closer to the reality of the event, some are closer. I guess what I'm trying to say is, in terms of what got us here, to pick out a single narrative thread about how the past traveled through until the present is just a single thread. What got us here, let's say, is everything.
Yeah.
The whole of life. And
the whole of totality.
How can you, you can't leave any experience out.
No.
To say that was not as instrumental as any other thing. Some things, so when we tell stories, we're making selective judgments on what was important and what wasn't.
Yeah.
What is and what isn't.
And that's often based on our values of what we think is important and what isn't. But actually, there's such a richness of life happening in any given moment.
Yeah.
And you couldn't excise a single part of it out of that without changing the moment entirely and therefore it no longer being that moment.
Yeah. And this idea of, you know, how reality comes about in the present moment, how does this moment come to be, you've got two options, which is, one, everything caused this. No single proximal cause is responsible for the state of affairs in any given moment. It's all of it. But actually the deeper truth is it's none of it. You know, this moment spontaneously arises. you know, there's an implied past, there's an implied future, but really there's no causality here. It's simply a spontaneous arising. And within it is this sort of, it's interesting that reality looks like there's a big, you know, there's space and time, but actually there is only now. And those ideas are of space, time, past, future, even present, are just part of the Maya of it, part of the dream, this beautiful orderly dream.
They're a relative truth in that they are true within the dream.
Yeah.
And so on that level, they have a truth to them, a truth to them.
Yeah.
Not the truth.
On its own level.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when you can kind of understand and get your head around it, but to me, the experience is what gives the true understanding of it.
Right.
But let's, you know, when you understand it, let's use that language.
Recognize it.
There's a better word. When you recognize that there are nested truths, there are layers of experience where, you know, things like time and space or gravity or whatever you want to pick on, that applies to that layer of relativity. Yeah. But when you can understand that there are multiple dimensions, multiple layers, multiple levels, multiple experiences happening simultaneously, there's where you start to see why the paradox of it all is there. And why actually, and we were touching on this the other day, it came up, this idea that the paradox is not...
Oh, it's something Jung said, which I found was amazing. He said that paradox is a better accounting of the nature of reality than non-paradox. So if you're in a non-paradoxical thing, it's one-sided.
Yeah.
But reality is so wide, so broad, so deep, so contradictory within itself that actually to use paradox, which is to say two like disparate, opposite, seeming contradictory ideas actually represents reality better than any one-sided view of it.
Yeah.
So as I love that, paradox is a better description of reality than non-paradox.
Yeah.
I think that's fascinating. But and then that quote, do I contradict myself? Yes, I contradict myself.
I am
myself.
Large, I contain multitudes.
Exactly.
Walt Whitman said that.
You've lost your thought.
I lost my train of thought.
It's terrible.
Yeah, well, it happens all the time. I always trust that it'll come back if
it's meant
to. We're
talking about paradox.
So there you go. Thank you. What I've perceived in working with people all these years is that as they come closer to recognizing the truth of themselves and the truth of reality, how this all is, they start to discover just how much of it is a paradox.
Right.
And they start to become at home with that as well. That's what I've perceived. I've noticed time and time again, actually, is there's less and less black and white thinking, as in either or, and there's more nuance and recognition of the paradox of all of this.
Yeah, holding several even contradictory ideas at the same time, or observations, realizing that.
Yeah.
The self that they are, the reality that they are, is fine holding these things.
Mm-hmm.
It's only the mind that wants you to come down on one side or another.
Exactly.
Which is to say, a fractional part a limited view.
And so it's like you start to see more and more paradoxes when. Awakening and enlightenment starts to take hold, there becomes more paradoxes, not less.
Yeah. Two seemingly contradictory things, perhaps, or seem they're both true.
Yeah, because on that level, there is ever-changing experiences, differentiated experiences, and there's where the paradox lives. Yet all is transcended to the recognition of it is no paradox, really. No. It's just life. It's just infinite waves arising in the infinite ocean.
Yeah, and it's full of, you know, it's relative in the sense that, you know, hot only exists in you know, relation to cold. These are relative ideas, and they both exist.
Yeah,
but relativity, paradox, nice. Yeah.
To sort of come back to the theme there that we were touching on of the experience is the greatest teacher.
Yeah.
So you talked about two things there. Actually, I've got, I don't know if it's a third, but something else that's coming up around that as well, of just practically speaking in that, what does that practically speaking look like? Yeah. In that, you know, every time we encounter an aspect of life, an experience of life, there's a deepening of insight, there's a deepening of understanding, there's a deepening of growth and recognition that happens. It's like the light of understanding, the light of life penetrating deeper and deeper into the experience, even if you're having the seeming same experience again and again and again and again and again.
Almost especially then, because it keeps... Well, it's... That's, go on, carry on.
I literally have my breath held then.
Go on, carry on.
So even if you're having the same experience again and again and again, every time there is a meeting of that experience, there is a deepening recognition and a deepening into and a growing from that experience. So you just take a really simple thing like the breath. I say that because I was just noticing that then. It's like you sink into the breath, and for most people, you don't pay attention to any of that. But when you start to pay attention as life, every life experience is teaching you something, you just pay attention to the breath, and you feel like every time you sink into the breath, you learn a little bit more about the breath, about yourself. About life. And so any experience that we could possibly have, to me, offers up that opportunity to taste life a little bit deeper, a little bit further. If you attend to it in that manner, if you come at it in that way of really starting to love life for the teaching that it provides in every experience. And so that was another view.
I like that. Well, it's actually a better expression of the second view that we were talking
that's
about.
Why I said I wasn't sure whether this was a third thing or not, but
well, it's like
it's just practical.
It shows up in ideas that you can get exposed to, that, you know, everything is satsang. That you hear that a lot in, if you're, you know, floating around the non-dual types, what it means is everything is an encounter with truth, and everything is everything is an encounter with truth. And I love the way that you point to something actually very subtle, that, you know, we might, when we say life itself is teaching us always, 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 I believe that truly. There's learning going on, teaching and learning going on, that whole thing, the growth, integration, insight. And one might think about that just in terms of the gross aspects of daily life, wandering around, having relationships with friends and family, and or jobs or life and everything, and you can come to that with, as you say, meet that knowing that what was that great quote, consider every moment as a communication of God with your soul. You know, it's that notion. But I love what you just pointed out then, which is the very intimacy of your own very seemingly mundane experience of of something like your breathing, that just by bringing your presence and attention and, you know, love, what is that presence and attention other than love, to that very regular, normal and mundane experience of just the breath and realize how much depth, how much richness, how much subtlety, how much you learn, because that every single moment, small, large, meat, everything is intimately connected with the wholeness always.
Yeah.
So in that subtleness of just observing the tenderness, the subtlety of your own breath, mm-hmm. going deeper, learning not just about your own experience, your own body, your own quality of attention, but also how that's connected to, you know, the whole of eternity, actually, the whole of infinity. It's all there.
Yeah, it doesn't end with the body.
Yeah.
Our experience doesn't end with the body. And so, but you can use that as a way into the self, the recognition of the totality of experiencing. Yeah. And so therefore, my view is that everything is a teacher. It's not only my view, but I really feel this to be true. Everything is a teacher. Everything is a teacher, mm-hmm. including all the dead ends and false starts.
Absolutely.
All of the seeming failures, all of the ways in which we feel we are failing to turn up for life in the way we want to, or want life to turn up for us. Everything becomes your teacher in that way. And
nothing is lost.
Yeah, and nothing's wasted either.
Nothing wasted, that's the better word, yeah.
And it's very humbling. It just, it leaves me with such a sort of sense of magnitude in my heart of just how much life is providing in that way for us.
It, what's beautiful as well is this idea that when you come to this place, when you realize that all experience, all of life, everything, every moment from subtle to gross and far and wide, large and small, everything, each moment of it is serving that purpose of deepening, growing, enlightening.
I was about to say the word illumination keeps coming up. Is and that's what enlightenment is to me, is to illuminate.
Bring light and clarity to experience.
Yeah.
What the effect of that is nothing is left out.
No.
Suddenly the whole of, there's nothing, and nothing therefore to be avoided. Nothing that shouldn't be there.
No, and if it's not there, or if we're not ready for something, let's say we've got this idea that we should be somewhere we're not, we can also, I feel, trust that life will bring it to bear in its own way, in its own time, and that actually if it's not meant for us in this moment, that is a learning in itself as well.
And even the sense that it should be there is itself something that can be attended to as
exactly.
What's in there, what's true about that, what is this teaching me, what is this showing me?
Yeah, to come at life with that attitude. I say attitude, but I think people...
Perspective, perhaps?
Yeah, but maybe that's a better word, because attitude seems like something I've got to sort of turn adopt, on.
Well, at first it might...
Yeah,
you know, this is the things that we talked about, the difference between prescription and description. You know, if you're personal, if your sense of yourself is, you know, primarily mind body, this is who and what I am, then you know that comes with the presumption of autonomy and volition, and so
all of that.
You know, any pointing tends to get construed into a practice.
Yeah, doing.
Yeah, so you're describing reality, but you're saying, well, how do I do that?
Yeah, and so it's appropriate until it seems
where
it's, and therefore so it's transcended and recognized. Oh, okay, I wasn't the doer of all of this,
yes.
But yeah, we've gone into for a that while, many
you're,
times.
You're doing, and then you find out that doing is less and less doing. It's more and more happening, more and more
a noticing or... I don't know why I keep liking using this word revelation right now. And I know people use it in these big biblical senses, but revelation in the sense of to be revealed.
Yeah.
To have something revealed to you.
Okay. How about this? Apocalyptic. No, well, I say that because the word apocalypse means to uncover, to reveal, to show.
Oh, wow.
But it's one of those words that you think
I had no
apocalyptic,
idea.
You imagine, you know, kind of, you know,
wasteland.
Horseman, wasteland, you know, and disease and lava falling from the sky.
There you go. I fell for that one then.
Straight off.
Totally. Well, as soon as you said that, I'm like, what's that got to do with all of this?
Yeah. The apocalypse is that movement towards revealing, showing, uncovering, bringing things to the light.
Yeah. And so I think...
So apocalyptic.
Okay, we're going to start using that word. I can see. We're going to start a movement. Revelations and apocalyptic. Oh, God. What could go wrong?
Yeah, what could go wrong? Sorry, I digress. I have no idea
what we were talking about.
I don't know either.
Revelation we were talking about. Yeah, yes. To you go from feeling... like you're doing any of this into more of a place of revelation, a recognition, aspects of and qualities of life being revealed, lit up. There's where our teaching is. What is being revealed to us? What is being lit up? And that comes in so many different forms.
And it's, you know, this is why the beauty of recognition, particularly, you know, abiding recognition, is knowing that it's all.
Yeah. All is folded in, all is included.
And, you know, the difference, let's say, between duality and non-duality, broadly speaking, is this recognition of the wholeness of it and the lived wholeness of it. And we talk about, you know, so... a more personal view would be, oh, this is teaching me something, but this isn't, and this is to be avoided, and this is to be embraced, and that's something valuable, and that was important, but this stuff isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a more non-dual view, and I mean this broadly speaking, small and non-dual, is that, oh, it's all doing it. It's the same notion, points to the same singularity as we talked about flow, and this idea that you're in flow or you're out of flow. Hey, I love getting into flow. And so I found myself. Whereas at a certain point, the recognition that there is only flow.
Yeah, all of this is flow.
All flow. It's the Tao, the Tao.
And all of this is self. All of this is...
There's no in and out. There's only what is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say the dual view to the non-dual view, or to the singular view, which is we're never out of flow. Flow is the very nature of reality.
And we are. There is no experience that is not consciousness as well.
And there's no experience that isn't, let's say, teaching in some sense. Or at least that we're not learning from gaining greater experience, knowledge, insight, you know, through, I think, into totality, actually, into infinity and beyond. So that was what the idea was that we wanted to come and explore was that, and I'll make it a little more personal in some sense because, as I say, when I would sort of say, oh, my path looked like this, I said that was just a narrative, but there were so many experiences that were happening outside of my obvious spiritual practices and studies and, you know, reflections. It was just life. It's just life itself and the circumstances of life teaching us what we need to learn and what we need to experience in order to learn. And, you know, there are tremendous... we started talking a little bit about the spiritual shocks that happen in life, and that's a sort of particular phrase, but it points to this idea that we can make sort of great spiritual leaps when often, and this is what my experience, and I know it's your experience, when, you know, when people who come to awakening often do so off the end of a shock, a spiritual shock or a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
That's to say something really suddenly challenging will come, and it can be things like bereavement, losing your job or your profession, losing something, or having an accident, or just
Or just the cracks of...
Or the cracks start to show.
Of your life start to show, yeah.
Exactly.
And things don't add up. Things don't make sense in the way they once did.
Yeah, which is in itself a spiritual shock.
Mm-hmm.
And so these can be tremendous, broad strokes, teachings. Life itself becomes the guru.
Mm-hmm.
Life becomes the teacher.
The illuminator.
Yeah, and I stand by this. I think the whole, my view is that this reality, this dream reality, is a school, a university, a college, a training, a boot camp. I don't know. But it's,
a
nothing is lost here. Everything is, because we are so much more than this.
Yeah, bus stop. I remember getting that image
right.
given to me at one time, and I really have seen so much why that works well of looking at it that way.
Right,
this is a bus stop.
I mean, this is just in terms of the length of a human life. I mean, it seems pretty long when you're in it sometimes, but really, it's
blink of an eye.
Well, I think it's in one of the Buddhist sutras, how should we consider this life like a drop of water, like a flash of lightning in a summer cloud. Yeah, like a drop of water in the stream, like a flash of lightning in a summer cloud. Thus should we consider this life. So fleeting. Gone.
And yet so in that fleetingness, so much fullness of it, so much fullness of learning and experiencing. Yeah.
That's not to say deny it, dismiss it, but find that unchanging part, but find that reality that upholds this fleeting.
Yeah, I mean, I've said that, life. I might even have said it on the podcast, I've certainly said it in satsangs before, where I feel that where you come to terms with the fleeting nature of life, i.e. death.
Yes.
You really start to live life then.
Yes.
It's like when you really touch the real recognition of the nature of life and death.
Yeah.
As being synonymous with this experience.
But finding that deep part of yourself, that doesn't live and die, that in the sense that it's non-corporeal. It's not fleeting.
Yeah. But sorry, I lost my train of thought then again. Obviously, I've had a lot going on, so it's hard for me to carry trains at the moment.
We're talking about life and death.
Yeah, so where there's a recognition of that, then there is a real living that starts to happen, because there's a real recognition of, okay, this moment is it.
Yeah.
It may not, it won't be again, but it's to live into fully.
Yeah.
And this is where, to me, you start to really learn to love life, start to really love the experience of this fleetingness, because all of this has come to be in this moment for you to experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Fleeting, passing, like flowers, spring flowers, soon there, soon gone. No, and it's beautiful. If one is only cognizant, recognizing the fleeting nature of oneself and reality, and that's all you think is, all you believe is, all you experience to be, then that is not a joy. That
no, it's can terrifying.
Be, terrifyingly vulnerable.
Yeah.
Fear of death.
Yeah.
Fear of life. But that's why they say it's once the ground has been recognized, the unchanging ground of all of this has been discovered, the unchanging, ever-present ground, then you can enjoy the seasons coming, going.
Yes, exactly. It is hand in hand. Those two things. Yeah, those two things are very much hand in hand. Two sides of the same coin, so to speak.
Yeah.
One without the other, leads to an imbalanced view of it and therefore an incorrect view of it.
Well, it's very hard, you know, it's... it's literally impossible to find a stable identity within the field of relative experiencing, because there's nothing stable here. And so if your sense of yourself is dependent upon some transient objective experiencing, then you're always going to feel vulnerable. And that, I think that, you know, this is our problem. This is the global, you know, problem. And the solution to the global problems is actually on the individual level. It's that our endless machinations and, you know, strategies to bolster a sense of identity that is untenable.
Truth wins out, and it reveals that it's untenable.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, not without a lot of craziness sometimes. And so the discovery of one's true nature is really the great joy and the great fulfillment. We can come to rest there. Oh, okay, I'm that. And all this is passing, but I myself I am that being, capital B.
Yeah. That leads really beautifully on to another subject we talked about talking about.
Okay, go on.
And that is bootstrapping enlightenment.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which was an idea I had a few years ago, or just as a way to just sort of describe a certain way of coming to enlightenment, coming to spirituality, awakening spirituality.
Yeah, because it used to be much more structured.
Yeah, you pick a line, wouldn't you? A path, a tradition.
A tradition. And you'd stick with that.
Yeah, and some still do.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can talk about the benefits and the pitfalls of both of these things. But to go more into what does it mean to bootstrap enlightenment, it means in this day and age where we have access at our fingertips through technology to so many different teachers and teachings and modalities and so many possibilities. It's not like you have to physically go to a cave in the Himalayas anymore, or even, you know, go to your library and request a single book or something.
Yeah, it's, or pick a modality that you have to act exclusively in relation to.
Yeah, you go on a course and you learn how to do that, and that's it. And now with the internet, we have access 24/7. To so much information and so many ways of into this. And in my view, there isn't a singular way to awakening. But there is your way.
Yes.
And your way can look like a single path, or it could look like a smorgasbord, if that's the right
smorgasbord,
word.
Smorgasbord, yeah. Okay, right.
Of different modalities and teachings and pointers, and that's the bootstrapping aspect.
I think it does depend on the person, doesn't it? Because, well, my path was looking at it. It was started off as a sort of an intellectual curiosity smorgasbord, and then I started to meditate, which was the real things got serious at that point. And so I stuck with a particular practice for a long time.
But prior to that, you had all sorts of...
I was all over the place. But I wasn't really rooted in deeply in experience. And it was because meditation gave me a very reliable recourse to my own nature. It was like, okay, so repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. So that became... So in some sense, I got on board that particular tradition. And so I engaged in that tradition, and I, you know, engaged with the teachings of that tradition as a singular path. And it was different then. This was, you know, this was the 90s. There was no early on. There were no internet. There was no internet, and there was just books and, you know, the books you could get hold of, or you could find I mean, for me, it was TM. It could have been, a Buddhist center somewhere. Mm-hmm. It could have been a, you know, there were streams you could get your boat on, mm-hmm. and follow that through. But by the end of my seeking, you know, in the 2000s, it was internet full blown. A lot of my interest and my approach was jumping on board with this teacher over there, reading that thing there, looking at this, meeting with that. It was the bootstrapping thing. Because what I felt back then was, when I was in the tradition, in the TM thing, that there was a path, and that path was marked by, you know, okay, I learned to meditate, great, and I'll do that, and then I'll go on courses, great, I'll go on courses, mm-hmm. and then I'll learn the Siddhi program, which I did, and then but you know, one of the reasons why bootstrapping was so helpful to me, and it is so helpful, is that so much of this is free.
Yeah, and it's the exclusivity thing. Yeah, there's so many people claiming exclusivity.
Yeah.
And it's not exclusive. The recognition of our own being is the most natural, fundamental recognition that anyone can come to.
Yeah.
It's not exclusive. It's the absolute opposite of that. Now, of course, there can be techniques and teachings that aren't obvious to everyone, and so there's where some exclusivity or some, you know,
yeah,
ways of being initiated in certain
That's why
techniques can be there, right? But, yeah,
but so much of you know, it dawned on me, because in the TM movement, there's a I don't want to be too polemical here, but you know, there was a lot.
It's not just them. It's quite common.
There's a lot of gatekeeping. There's a lot of closed doors, and you can't really access it unless you really are initiated into that. And you know, yeah, it's not an open teaching, in a sense that, you know, you have this Mahesh Yogi, you know. I remember I watched hours and hours of his teachings, you know, as a meditator on courses and whatnot. And it was really beautiful to be exposed to, you know, a sage like that and his teachings. But if you weren't initiated into that,
you didn't have access to it.
And there's libraries full of Maharshi's teachings. But unless you're a meditator or a siddha or involved in that movement, you don't get access. And what I love about this modern age, and this is why you can bootstrap it, is because we're in the age of openness again. It's the apocalypse. It's the uncovering. It's the opening. Everything's out in the open. And what I loved about, you know, coming into the direct path teachings, like non-duality and stuff, which is a living inquiry into the nature of your own being, that this is not proprietary.
There's no gatekeepers.
And it's there. You can have the conversations. You can listen to the conversations. Yeah. You can read about it, and you can do the exploration for yourself. And so you can pick and choose what works for you.
Yeah.
And it's wide open.
I see this, obviously, you and I sort of are in the world of transmissions.
Yeah.
And I see that in transmissions as well. There are some that have that closed door sort of sense of transmissions.
Yeah.
And there are others that have a more open door view of transmissions. Yeah. I think both of us fall into that latter category of transmissions aren't exclusive. They are pointing to something that we all are.
Yeah.
And we are, whether that is obvious and to us or occluded from us, it is still pointing to back to the self.
Yeah, it's enlivening the divine light within.
Yeah.
And for a while that looks like a transmission, and it kind of is. It is until it isn't.
On one level it is, yes.
Yes. Yes, it is, and of course that mirrors my own path. I'm talking about my own path here today, but anyway,
that's all right. Go with it.
Getting close to as a seeker, getting close to a sage was really important, because whether it was online or in person or whatever, and like, because I found that I was recognizing the energy, the presence, the Shakti,
exactly.
Right? The divine light of the sage, but I saw it as something outside of myself.
Yes, and I think that's very natural. Most people do.
Yeah. Exactly. So I wanted to get as close to that as I possibly could, and there I am. Oh, you know, sitting with
It's exclusive to them.
But at a certain point through that process of being exposed to the. To it in another, it seems like it's only in the other, or that, or rather, you only experience, if you look at yourself, you're experiencing it in yourself, in the vicinity of the awakened other. So that's the experience of it. But the exposure to that, this is my experience anyway. The exposure to that, repeated, prolonged exposure to that, this kind of dissolved my own, you know, occluding mental densities or something, one way of putting it, to the point at which I recognize, oh, I am that.
Yeah.
And so. I was not in the ultimate sense, I wasn't getting it from them, although that is the legitimate experience up to the point at which that other... melts away yours, and you go, oh, it's all me, actually.
Exactly.
Anyway.
They act as a tuning fork or an anchor point.
Yeah.
Until there is a sufficient recognition of that tuning fork and anchor point within yourself, and at that point, it's recognized they were never separate from this that I am.
Well, here's the thing, and I say this to anyone who's listening or in relation to like teachers and teachings and whatnot. Your experience of that is your own consciousness manifesting teachings back at you. So it's all you. It's like it's all about you at the bottom, at the end of the day.
Yeah, and you not as the personal self, you right. only, although that is part of the experience too.
Yes, no, exactly.
But it's you as consciousness.
You as consciousness.
As being.
You know, manifesting a kind of an alarm clock in the shape of a teacher that points back to you, your own, you know, wakes you up to your own nature.
I like that. That's tickled me.
So
alarm clock. I love that. Sorry, that's I'm stuck on that. It's really ding-ling, really touched my heart.
So, you know, and that's the birth of that seeing. Oh, actually, it's me. And you can't fake that. But it comes to part, that seems to be the mechanism.
And so that's why bootstrapping is really beautiful, because it allows you to really free up your notions of one way, and allows you to really start to tune into and feel that energetic resonance or that sense of ripeness or rightness of that alarm clock, of that, that feels, in this moment, that feels where I'm at. It feels aligned with where I'm at, that what is being presented.
Yeah.
And to not be afraid to really follow your nose on that.
And it's the self, though. I mean, this is the important thing to remember. And it's very easy to objectify. As a seeker, it's the objectification often of saying, oh, this teacher, this guru has it and I really don't. So that's fine as that part of the path. That's true enough for that part of the path. But ultimately it's like, and I liked what Osho said about this, I'm not here to create devotees, I'm here to create masters. And that's the viewpoint. You want, you know, any decent teacher is trying to, you know, awaken, help the other awaken to their nature. And we talk about transmissions on this level, that it's that it's true enough that a transmission is occurring between, let's say, the transmitter and the student or receiver. That's true enough. But the goal of it and the recognition of the reality is that facilitates, ideally, the recognition that, oh, I am that divine light. I am that singular reality, and all this is the manifestation of my own being as consciousness. So
then the teacher disappears, the student disappears, and all is left as the self.
Yeah. But the teacher was always the alarm clock. It was always that, like, it was your own consciousness orchestrating your own remembrance.
Yeah. Yeah. I think where bootstrapping can be tricky.
Yeah.
Is where you do come at it from an intellectual, this is cycling back to the beginning of this podcast, actually, is where it comes from an intellectual stance of trying to gain more knowledge.
Right.
And then happen is you actually end up more confused, not less confused. Because what you'll notice if you start plugging into all sorts of different types of teachings is they all use language slightly differently. They all point to experiences in slightly different manners with different language. And the mind will then try and map all of this out and come to a point of,
yeah. Well, they can.
How does this all work together?
They can seem to be, if you haven't got the right mind for it, you can be seen to be a bunch of contradictions.
Exactly.
If you're not following the pointings.
Yes. And so that was my next point of like, so if you're bootstrapping enlightenment on an intellectual level only, mm-hmm. what you're likely to bump into is confusion. You're likely to get very confused because you're staying on the level of the intellect that is only seeing contradictions. However, if you allow that to sink into the experience, you allow those pointings, every single one of those pointings it could be in, and you'll see they are contradictory. A lot of them will be contradictory. Yeah. Because there's a lot of, it's like infinite facets of the same gen.
That's right.
So you take even one of those pointings and you sink fully into what is being pointed to experientially.
Yeah.
What you'll notice is every single one of those pointings bottom out in the same. And yes. So this is where it doesn't become confusing anymore. This is where the confusion is rectified.
Yes.
So that, I think I just wanted to mention that as why I think people struggle when they're bootstrapping, why people, quotes, fail at that is because, and go back to a singular path and go, well, a singular path is better.
Yes.
Is likely because they're staying at it on an intellectual level of trying to understand intellectually all these different comparing teachers. Them, yeah.
Like, oh, but this person said
this and this person said that. Yeah. And actually, what I would say to someone who is struggling with that confusion there is to start to allow yourself to sink into and start using the body to do that, to sink into the experience of it. What is it pointing to in the experience? And you'll start to see that they're not contradictory expressions in terms of the roots of them, in terms of the fundamental root of it.
Well, it comes back to this thing about comparison as well, and the real danger of comparison. Now, it almost seems like sort of at odds here, because we're talking about bootstrapping, and by definition, you're going to be exposing yourself to a variety of different approaches, teachings, whatever. But you're not comparing them.
No,
you're using each one of them, as you say. If you don't compare one to another, it's not an analytical process. No. It's find something that like you might be resonating with, and if that resonates with you, follow that to, as you say, down to its root.
Source, yeah.
Follow that. Don't say, hey, they say that, but that said that, so one of them must be wrong.
Yeah.
That's not it. Does each one find the root and the source
find
of
the
each one on
of,
their own terms?
Exactly.
And that way, all these different things can coexist and cohabit quite nicely.
Yeah.
Because you're not comparing and trying to use you know, your mind to say, oh, that one's right, that one's wrong. It's about resonance and depth and finding that.
Exactly.
It's funny, I've got a list I compiled, I don't know, a couple of years ago, of a bunch of, I was curious because in my seeking, I had gone through all these different, I'd gone through all these different, in my own bootstrapping process, I was exposing myself to all sorts of teachers and teachings and different methods and whatnot. And I took just a little list of some of the teachers that I was following. And what I saw was that each one of them had like a pointing or a viewpoint. A teaching that could be summarized in some way. Was their point of focus, and it was their particular Dharma gate. You know, they might have some commonalities, but they were,
and they may have lots of teachings, yes, but they always have one that they keep coming back to.
And so what was this? So you've pulled up the list here, so it was interesting. I'll maybe go through a few of them. So the first one on the list here is Pema Chodron. And Pema Chodron is a beautiful Buddhist, American Buddhist. And her main teaching was Shenpa. And Shenpa was this idea of getting hooked. So noticing when you sit quietly in the quietness of your being, meditation, noticing when you're getting hooked and just allowing that to release. And that was a really powerful one for me. That gets subtler and subtler and subtler and subtler. So just sitting in your own.
Yeah, that was quite, I remember that being quite pivotal for you.
Yeah, it was. At a certain point, it was like that awareness of the gross times when I was getting shenpa'd. You know, shenpa means to sort of be hooked, you know, like when you're hooked in a kind of a thinking process, and just release that. And that's felt in the body.
Mm-hmm.
That's somatic. That shenpa is the mind, but it's the body.
Mm-hmm.
So that correlation is there. So I really went really beautifully deep with that one. It really sort of really released lots of gross and subtle tissues of contractions that were existing in, you know, at a certain point. So Shenpa was hers. I mean, she talks about a lot of things, but Shenpa seems to be a theme. Another one here, Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, his focus was very much mindful breathing. That was it, you know, not just that, of course, but it was mindful. And in fact, the Western mindfulness movement, which was pretty much begun by, I think, Jon Kabat-Zinn, famously introduced sort of secular mindfulness practice. He was taught basically this by Thich Nhat Hanh. You know, so mindfulness comes back from that. So mindfulness, mindful breathing in particular, you know, that was the point of focus. And that was Thich Nhat Hanh, to my eyes, his core pointing was another one. Ramesh Balsekar, there's nothing you can do. You know, that was his, he was a total non-doer.
Yeah, or have the mind take that one or not on board. And it was,
It was like, you know, his whole focus of his teachings was on non-doership.
Yeah.
And I love that, you know, Guruji, what can I do? How can I? There's nothing you can do, you know, and of course, his teachings were tremendous. All of these people, their teachings are rich and varied. But they seem, to my eyes, to have these themes. So, yeah, there's nothing you do. Non-doership was his. Gangaji was another teacher I was sort of exposed to, and hers was just stop.
Mm-hmm.
Call off the search. You know, that's the core pointing reality to which, you know, so much of her teaching was oriented around. Just stop. What happens if you just stop? Stop your strategy, stop your seeking, stop.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really beautiful. Papaji, Sri Punjaji, a great, profound teacher. Keep quiet. I mean, it was very much, you know, in self-inquiry in the present moment. But actually, when you watch him go at someone will come up, you know, to get into inquiry with him, keep quiet. And well, I mean, actually, Gangaji was very
I was about to say Gangaji very, came from him, she was so a it's product interesting of that,
so it's the same thing.
Yeah,
you know.
That's just stop is very but, akin yeah, to that.
Yes, so but there's this I think it was Sama Iru or something like that, or can't remember. Anyway, keep quiet.
Mm.
Just stop them, just keep quiet within.
Mm-hmm.
There's Argadatta, I am, focus on the I am-ness,
mm-hmm.
the sense of your own existence, the I am, you know, abide as that, and it'll all come clear.
You're, as you're speaking already, I'm sure everyone listening can hear that too, all the seeming contradictions in, right. Well, which one should I do? And, you know, yeah. These kind of questions yeah. start to come up. It's like, oh, yeah. But how does that relate to this one? And what does that right. relate to that one? And is yeah. that teacher then a better teacher than that teacher?
Yeah. And so you've got like Ramana Maharshi, who am I? Yeah. That's like, who am I? You know, inquire directly into the source of your sense yeah. of I. Very similar to abiding as the I am, similar yeah. but subtly different, but leads to the
antithesis
the same place.
Of, on the surface at least, yeah. the antithesis of there's nothing you can do.
Yes, right. yeah, nothing you can do. Or Shempo, you know, releasing. Yeah. Well, who's doing the releasing?
Exactly.
So these become contradictory. Exactly. But if you compare, but if you just follow each one to where it's pointing
root.
To, follow yeah. the pointing to where it is. What else have we got? Adyashanti, you know, the core of his teaching, rest as awareness,
mm-hmm.
which is very similar to Papaji's, you know, keep quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Just stay in the quietness. So the I amness. So these are different ways of saying or pointing to the same kind of place.
Yeah,
ultimately.
And actually when even Pema Chodron, you know, the release, the Shempa,
yeah.
it
drop.
Once there is a release there that happens, you are coming to the same place of resting as awareness.
Exactly.
So all of them lead to the same root.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah.
And but again, if you take it from the mind and you take it from comparison, you will not see that.
I got you on here as well, funny enough. Imogen Webber.
Okay, I'm interested. What's my teaching?
Everything is included. I'm not saying, well, it remains to be seen. Whether.
It remains to be seen. But yeah, that's a pretty cool one.
As I say, I you don't want to pin anyone down here. But
no, because there's a lot
me,
else
these
that can
are,
be
these
said.
These are my takeaways and my sort of my sense of the distillation of their teachings.
I had a spark of something as you were saying that. I wonder how much was the interaction of what you were ripe to hear versus what is actually the core of their teaching. Because
right
I think there's probably an interaction there as well.
I think
well.
It's a bit of both. I don't
yeah,
think it's all together one or all together the
I agree.
Other.
I agree. I would say that.
Someone might pick up something else.
Yeah. And
but
actually,
you know,
for them,
are...
they hear that teaching, that aspect of someone's teaching, and it resonates so much that they
yeah.
go, that is their teaching.
Yes.
And it's
yes,
because
exactly.
actually it's something that really,
yes.
really they needed to hear and could hear in
yes.
that moment.
Yes. But I sort of stand by the fact that I think a lot of this is reasonably fair because,
yeah.
You know, we all have our approaches. I'm not sure. I don't know what I would say mine is if it, you know. And it's not, I don't want to be reductionist here.
No, and but also you've been exposed to these teachers time and time again
yeah.
over time. You get a sense of where someone's coming
yeah.
from.
I was just playing about with this, but,
yeah.
you know, there's some truth in it. But the idea of bootstrapping is therefore, so this is just a short list, for example.
And
of,
you've got more, yeah. It's just
some themes and some kind of core pointings and quotes, practices of a variety of teachers.
What
now,
was Buddha's?
I'm not sure I had him on the list, actually. Did I? Oh, yeah. Something like the... it depends. It honestly, it depends. Four Noble Truths would be the thing. That life, there is suffering. There's cause to suffering. There's a way out of suffering. You know, well, what the causes are, and then so the Four Noble Truths, three dukkha, mm-hmm. samudaya, nirodha, marga, those are the sort of four truths,
mm-hmm.
and the Noble Eightfold Path that seemed to be the, but of course Buddhism is yeah, I Four Noble Truths, that's what I put down for that, you know, understanding those truths,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, there is suffering, there are reasons for that suffering, there's the possibility, the end of that suffering, and through the path, there's a path to the end of that suffering. So
mm-hmm.
that's the... but there have been different... there have been lots of great sages who've come up with different things like... you know, emptiness is form, form is emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
There are different, what they call turnings of the wheel in Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
Turnings of the wheel of Dharma, which means like a shift. I don't know exactly when they were, but there are I think three, arguably four, turnings of the wheel. So the first turning was Buddha in the Deer Park offering up the Four Noble Truths and the Noble Eightfold Path. But then later it became less about, let's say, less about the individual attaining nirvana and more about the very nature of reality. Emptiness is form, form is emptiness, that kind of stuff. I'm not.
You're not claiming to be an expert.
No.
I think that's what you were trying to say.
There's too many schools.
Oh, I just knocked my mic.
Yeah, I think I've been banging away at my mic. I'm not sure. Anyway, I think the idea, but the to point to that from the point of the, I guess, to mention the, you know, this idea is that variety of teachers have a variety of teaching modes and a variety of let's call them Dharma gates, for want of a better word.
Yeah, and they're also speaking to the individual in front of them often.
But it's important that if you're engaging in sort of bootstrapping enlightenment, that if you're experiencing, as you said, some sort of confusion or some sort of contradictions in your own thinking about a variety, because it's very hard to avoid the variety.
Yeah,
now,
nowadays,
right?
Yeah. So you go on Facebook and there's a million different quotes from a million different teachers.
So how do you skillfully engage with all these things? Well, don't compare, but recognize your resonance with these teachings and teachers and follow the pointings to where they're pointing rather than comparing them to each other.
Yeah, because and use your body for that resonance, I would say. There you can start to feel the presence of that teacher, whether the presence of that teacher is, for want of a better language here, the right frequency, the right resonance, the right vibration for you, as in they are speaking what you are ripe to hear.
Yes, but and also transmitting what you're ripe to receive and acknowledge.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a resonance that needs to be heard, because when I was, you know, in the last couple of years of my seeking, I was exposed to just a handful of some of the teachers who I would kind of
engage with.
But there was a lot I completely dismissed. You have to be discerning about this and go, nah, not so much. Figure out what works for you.
And what works for you may not work for another. And so not comparing yourself to other, quote, seekers either is, I think, also very important. You know, using their suggestions. Oh, I heard about this person. That really made sense to me. That really resonated with me. You know, not to cut yourself off from that, but at the same time, use it as a jumping off point to discern for yourself what works for you and to trust that.
And so this idea of bootstrapping is like it's got a couple of resonances, but one of them is a sort of a business resonance. So you're starting up a business, you don't have a lot of resource, you use what you can where you are.
Yeah, you cobble together
like that. So there's not what I saw at some points. This is why I came to this. For a while, I was experiencing, you know, at certain stages, oh, if only I could have this, be on this course, or if only I could sit at the feet of this teacher, if only I could get to India, and, you know, there was these feelings of lack that would come up with me.
Missing out. That FOMO. Yeah,
that I didn't have what I needed.
Yeah.
And part of the idea of bootstrapping enlightenment is you do have everything you need.
Yeah.
If you think you need that, but it's not there. That thing's not for you. What do you have? What can you utilize? What can you really employ?
You can meditate on a single leaf all the way down to the bottom of that and discover the same thing that going on a 10,000 pound course in,
which points back to the same idea that the life is offering you exactly what you need at any given moment. And if you're feeling a lack, then that lack actually is the gift
can be
that
your
you're
teacher,
being given.
Yeah.
You let that, that teach you.
Yes, absolutely. I really, really stand by that view as well. Like the very thing that you think is the thing that's stopping you. Yeah, the obstruction, that's the right word. Is actually the very thing you sink into, meet, include. There you go, there's my teaching. Include that. And you will discover that actually it's right there all along. Yeah. And Dio knows the very one that is looking out of these eyes is the one that you are seeking for.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, we're about 1:15. Should we?
Yeah. God, that went quickly.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anything else we want to do? I mean, we can keep going if you want. If there's anything else we feel you want to explore.
No, I think we've touched on some important points there. Yeah, everything is your teacher. I think this is, and obviously we've gone into bootstrapping, but that is very much along the same theme there for me.
Yeah.
It's along the same lines of using everything as a teacher, to not assume you don't have everything you need.
Yeah.
It, whatever your life is looking like, actually.
Yeah.
That you don't have everything you need to discover your nature and to find that which is beneath all of this suffering, and to find that which can hold everything that you are, every experience, every part of life that you currently feel you are suffering from.
Yeah. I have nothing to add on that.
You are your own guru.
Yes, but you is a bigger you than you think.
Yes.
All of life is you.
Yeah.
Mirroring, orchestrating, revealing, reflecting, teaching.
Guiding you. Life is guiding you. I really feel that there is no part of life that is wasted. Yeah. Every part of life gives an opportunity to know thyself more and more.
I told you, it's on the list.
Which what? What is on the list?
Everything is included.
Okay, all right.
Which is actually, how you say it? No, because what's interesting is that you don't include it all, but that is the sort of instruction, but the revelation is it is all included.
It is all included. We think that that's a prescription of something we have to do, and for a while it looks that way.
Yeah.
But actually the recognition fundamentally is that is a description. Yeah. All is included. All is consciousness.
Yeah.
All is self. All is this.
Nice. Okay, we are going to, on that lovely note.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see you next time, everyone.
Yeah, thank you for listening. I have to say it. If you feel like
if you want
to hear about when the next episode's released, subscribe.
Yeah. Substack is our subscription place.
Well, let's talk about that. Actually, just a brief thing. The way we've got it organized, this podcast, is that we're hosting it on Substack.
Yeah.
Which means you can go in, you can go straight to the podcast on Substack and subscribe at Substack.
Yeah.
And that's great.
It'll send you an email every time we release.
Yeah. So that's one way of subscribing to the podcast. The other ways are the more usual ways.
Of course.
Which you don't have to go to Substack at all. You go straight to
Apple Podcasts
or Spotify. Google Play or Spotify and those places. We're on all the major podcasts.
We also put it on YouTube. That normally happens a couple of hours after.
Yeah.
And one day we hope to do a video, but it hasn't quite happened yet.
Yeah, right now it's audio on YouTube.
Yeah.
But some people, you know, I like to listen to this new podcast on YouTube. That's fine.
Yeah.
And yeah, we will go. It's likely that when we can figure out how to set the cameras up and whatnot, we're going to just make it into a, you know, video podcast for YouTube.
Yeah, there'll still be the audio podcast. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, just additionally, we will eventually get around to doing video as well.
So anyway, I think however you like to listen, like helps, gives us, I suppose, I don't know, I suppose like help, like, having like, likes helps.
Whatever. Get the word out.
Yeah.
Subscribe
feel
and
like
share.
If you feel like, if you think someone might like to hear it, share.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's that bit. thanks so much for listening, everyone, and we'll tune in again soon.
Yeah.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye.